kind of glossed over one official Doctor Who thing that absolutely did get rewritten. The official Ninth Doctor, Richard E. Grant. He was announced as the official Ninth Doctor, like then it quickly got erased.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Casterbus. This time, James McLean, Brian Terranova, and I are talking about Doctor Who fan productions, unofficial spin-offs, and that surprisingly difficult question, what actually counts as canon? From Downtime and BBV to Big Finish fan films, and even Richard E. Grant's briefly official Ninth Doctor, just who gets to decide what is and what is not Doctor Who? You were saying earlier, Brian, that you're working on a project and you've put that to one side for the time being as well.
Some people may have seen it out there. Probably one person, I would imagine, has seen it out there. It was an Orville fan series, not even a Doctor Who fan series. It was something that the guy I worked with years ago when we made our Legacy fan series, he wanted to make an Orville one. And it just so happened that like we were talking about it and then COVID hit. And so that really kind of stalled things and really kind of delayed things. And with all the delays from people not being able to get together or life changing or jobs changing, hell, I had two surgeries in that time. But when we were trying to do this, our projects just kept getting delayed and delayed. But while we were slightly delaying, we kept also going, oh, here's another idea for an episode. And we could do this episode instead of the one where the people aren't available. So we kind of lost track of the story. And so because of that, and because people are still kind of going through some things, we decided to put it on the back burner and focus on a new project instead that we're going to kind of, at least I'm putting my foot down, we're going to kind of strictly adhere to the stories that, you know, I think when we did it was called A Planetary Step, our Orville series. And we originally planned it to be like five, maybe six, something like that. And we quickly got away from that. We added episodes in. Anytime there was a new cast member, Eric, the creator of the series, wanted to just do a story about that person joining the team. And it was kind of like, okay, why are we doing that? You know, like, can we do it another way kind of thing? But it worked to get us filming again. So it was good practice. It was good to get things filming. But ultimately, in the end, you kind of realize, this will be my realization. I don't want to speak for anybody else. I realized, I don't know how many people were watching an Orville-based fan series. Like if it was a Star Trek or a Doctor Who one, I think it might have brought more attention to it. But the Orville, I don't know. It wasn't really my thing. It was fine. It was fine series they created, but I wasn't seeing the attention. And so therefore I felt that the story that I was weaving in the scripts, no one was paying attention to. So when we finally did do a story that was on track, I would sit there and I would go, awesome, let's see, what are they saying? And all they were saying was, good job, guys. And it was like, All right, cool. Like no one's caring about the story, you know? And I found that to be kind of like sad in a little way, because I remember like watching fan films like years ago, and even like to go back to Star Trek, there was a fan series, Farragut, which was an original series Star Trek set fan film series, and they were fun. It was neat, like how they were doing it, a little fan servicey in a way, which I guess a lot of fan films are in general. But it was fun and you kind of cared about the storylines they were weaving. And I was looking at the films that they've even done up till now, because now they're in the Star Trek, the original series movie era. And the thing that I was most impressed with, aside from their budget and their sets and so on, was that they would do a story and then set up the next story. And even though it might take them a couple of years to do it, that next story was that story that they set up. And I was like, we're just not doing that. We're setting up this story, and then because everybody isn't available for one reason or another, we're deviating, we're losing the audience. And that was something that kind of made me think, like, maybe that's even what happened with Splink. We had such great plans for it, but we didn't have the time to make those plans happen, so we kind of lost the attention even for ourselves to do that. So the new hope with the new series that we're going to do is a hyper focus, and we're going to focus It's one story right now. We're doing that one story. There's technically three planned, but if you don't see all three, you don't lose anything because this is just the one story, and it's a story unto itself. When there's all three together, it's a broad picture, but without all three, you don't lose anything at the same time. So it's just something I realized because I personally have watched a couple. I mean, I don't know, you guys probably watched too. I don't know if this is your thing, but I watched a lot of fan films over the years, and lately I saw a couple that I found interesting as well. And you see what goes into it with a lot of these people, and some of them you just wish, like, man, I wish I had the budget or I wish I had the money. And I don't know if the audience is aware of like the drama in the Star Trek world where there's rules on Star Trek fan films, for example, now because one guy was making like millions off of making his fan film. And obviously Paramount didn't enjoy that. And not that every fan film does. Some of them are just really cool, fun people wanting to tell fun stories, wanting to be the characters, their favorite characters, you know? But yeah, that's the gist of it. This stuff kind of fascinates me that people will take the time out of their lives to do this, but we now today more than ever have the tools to tell these
Tools to
types
do
of
it, yeah.
stories, you know, and that's what's really great about it, I think. You know,
James,
I
you
lost
told me.
something there, but
Yeah. James, you told me a few weeks ago, didn't you, that was it Downtime is on Amazon Prime?
oh yeah.
The
Yes, I
Doctor
did.
Who thing, which was the was this the was this the first thing that had the Kate Lethbridge Stewart character
Yes, it
in?
was. Yeah. Yeah.
So,
So
and that's free to watch on Amazon Prime, is it?
it's on YouTube as well,
Oh, it's on YouTube.
officially.
That's right.
It's on both. So you can I found it on Prime, just buried at the bottom. Bit like the old bargain basement bins, you know, eventually you push you scroll enough to the right, it starts to get to the point where you're like, well, there's this. And you go, oh, hang on. That's interesting. I'd imagine seeing something with Elizabeth Sladen on Amazon Prime. So yeah, and that's an interesting one, really, isn't it? Because it is, I suppose, in its core, a fan film.
Oh,
Yet,
absolutely, yeah.
still carries a certain legitimacy. Even at the time, it carried a sort of pseudo legitimacy through who was actually in the production and in the crew and in the cast. But also, as I say, as time gone by, Kate Lethbridge Stewart is now considered. And I think there was a conversation at one point that there might have been a shot from Downtime in one of the recent stories, which has legitimized it. But I think that's a nice segue, Christian. That's a good segue. I like it because it does bring that point about how, you know, fan fiction or fan films, or even just fan writing. Because I mean, obviously, Brian talking about writing as well, how that has been the conduit for the last 20 years for so many official shows who now have people on board, cast and crew who grew up and used to write or wrote in those sort of spaces before actually finding themselves within the sort of official spaces as well.
I was just going to catch up on Downtime because you mentioned the people that were in it, James, but you didn't actually specify because Nick Courtney's in it, Deborah Watling's in it, Elizabeth Sladen, as you say, Jack Watling's in it, and
His
Kate
last.
Lethbridge Stewart is played by Beverly Cressman.
But I think more the point there, in terms of what Brian was talking about, is it was Mark Platt who wrote it, wasn't it?
Right, that's what you're going to say, yeah.
So you've got a writer, you know, someone who was in the Doctor Who fandoms before. Oh, I don't know. Actually, that's a good point. With Mark Platt, I don't know his background before series 26.
I have interviewed Mark Platt many years ago, so I should know the answer to this, but I'm not entirely sure what it is at
Is
the
it in our
moment.
archives? Have you got that in
It's
our
not, but
archives?
I'm going to dig it out and find it and put it
I
in
think you
there.
should.
Yeah, I do as well, yeah.
And then you could actually look into the archives and find the answer.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that there was something beyond writing that he was doing, and I just can't put my finger on it at the moment.
I mean, obviously, if we go aside from that, but obviously, people like, you know, Chris Chibnall, as you say, Russell T Davies, Stephen Moffat, all come from sort of very strong Doctor Who fan circles of writing fiction before moving into the and then defining what is. I think my point is, it's just interesting that these people who write and at the time people go, oh, they're just fans, or they, you know, it's just fan fiction, but ultimately become the ones who actually start to define what is actual in the actual
Yeah.
story, in the actual franchises. Whether Mark Platt was one of those or not, I'm not 100% sure now. I
It'd be
suspect he
interesting.
was, given his stuff like Lung Barrow was so specific and so, if you were just a writer who wrote about Doctor Who, would you write that for book? I don't know. Anyway, so carry on.
Well, I was thinking really, because I mean that whole thing, there was kind of, I mean that isn't the only sort of group of people that was doing it, but there was various, wasn't it, fan productions for Doctor Who, I think it
Mark
was.
Platt wrote Ghostlight.
Yes, he did.
But was he a fan before he got that? That's my question. Just to,
Oh, I see what you're saying. Was he?
yeah.
I mean, good question.
I mean, his stuff
So,
suggests to me that he was, but I don't
yeah, I was going to say, I kind of have a feeling that he had to have been, because
know.
how do you go from writing for actual Doctor Who, and then the next thing that you do is a fan video for Doctor Who rather
Well,
than something
that is true.
in the
Yeah.
industry,
And downtime is very specifically encroached within, at the time, Doctor Who lore, which, to be honest, wasn't a great amount in the really classic series that you can really pull on as being like that has strong continuity. But
But what I was just kind of getting at is that there's this many sort of like strands of kind of Doctor Who fan movie things that have all, in some way, gained legitimacy either because the people involved with them. I mean, Nick Briggs, Big Finish. I mean, Nick Briggs was involved with loads of Doctor Who
absolutely.
fan productions, wasn't he?
I was actually just talking to with a friend about this. I've got him kind of started on a journey listening to the Paul McGann Big Finish Eighth Doctor plays. And in Paul's first season, because when Paul McGann signed up to do Big Finish, it was 2001. So it was before the new series came about. He was at that point the current Doctor. So they treated him very much like they had their own Doctor, and they did his he was part of the Doctor Who monthly range at Big Finish, which was every month was a new Doctor Who story, but it was a different Doctor. Until Paul came around, they gave him like 4 months in a row. This way he had a season one and then a season two, et cetera. But two of the stories from his first season were originally, I believe it was BBV audios. What was that? Bill Baggs videos. They also did Audio Adventures. I think that's what that was. But Sword of Orion and Minuet in Hell were part of his first season, and they were adapted. I guess I don't know. I don't re recall if Nick Briggs wrote them for that. He might have done, because I think he was the writer for at least one of them. But they took those stories that were fan made, fan loved, fan made stories, and then adapted them under an official BBC license. Even though it wasn't the show, they adapted it for Big Finish Doctor Who. So. Yeah, lots of that going about, you know. And then, of course, Doctor Who took it a step further and took Dalek, no, excuse me, Jubilee from Big Finish and adapted it somewhat into the story of Dalek. And then they did it again, I guess, with spare parts, sort of. They credit, gosh, I feel like a jerk not remembering who wrote Spare Parts, but or Jubilee. I think it's
Was
Robert
Mark Platt,
Shearman
wasn't it?
wrote
Spare
Jubilee.
parts.
Was it?
Jubilee was Jubilee
Jubilee
Robert
was Robert
Shearman.
Shearman.
Robert Shearman, right? That's right. Yeah. And then
I think Spare
Spare
Parts was
Parts,
Mark
I'm
Platt.
not sure. It's funny when you look up Mark Platt on Internet Movie Database, he's pretty much just done fan science fiction in a way. And when I say that, I mean like all these adventures for Big Finish.
Spare parts, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, and
Was
then he
Mark
wrote
Black.
two. He wrote a Doctor Who episode. Who did Mark Platt with Spare Parts? Okay, so
Yes,
yeah,
yeah.
he gets credited with Rise of the Cybermen, Age of Steel, even though it's interesting because all it is like an alternate origin of the Cybermen. I don't know how much of those stories were that similar. Where Spare Parts was a great story, but I don't, there wasn't a lot of correlation between that. But then again, Dalek's not exactly identical to Jubilee either. You know, the main, it seems like they took the main theme, Lone Dalek and Origin of Cybermen kind of thing, you know, and this is the story. But then there was also, what's that other fan series? Devious, Doctor Who Devious, that they started, I think they started in the 80s or the early 90s, and they're still not done with it. They have five episodes of a six-part adventure uploaded online. They're still working on episode six, and episode six is the part where they had Jon Pertwee, and he filmed a regeneration scene, you know, the lead up, and they even use some of the audio from that, they took some of the audio, just not from the recording, but from conversations they had with John on set, and used them in a Big Finish, the 50th anniversary play, no, 40th anniversary play for Zagreus, for Paul McGann. They had John Pertwee play a character in their play, a doctor, if you will, sort of in a way in that story. All because of that show, and we still haven't even actually seen it properly yet. You know, they released some footage of it over the years, but they haven't finished putting that final episode out yet, you know. But they're still dedicated, they're still doing it, you know, they're still
Yeah.
making that thing work.
And there's also, when we were doing Casterbus as like a daily news site, there was one of the things that came along a couple of times over the period was the Nick Scovell Productions, who was he did a remake of one of the Dalek serials, Power of the Daleks, I think.
Didn't he do Evil, or did he
Was
do
it Evil of
both?
the Daleks? I knew it was going to be, it was a 50-50, wasn't it? It was going to be the wrong one.
Did it like as a stage play, right?
Yeah, I think so. But there was a
And
video as
then,
well.
but then there was a video.
That's right. Yeah.
I mean, downtime is a fascinating one because of it's just such a locus for Doctor Who fandom. Because you've also, I mean, you've on the sort of official side, we've didn't mention you've also got John Leeson's got a big role in it as well.
Right. Yes, I'm just looking at him. Yes.
Jeffrey Beavers is in it as well. Not as m the master, but he's in there as well. You've got as a Yeti, you've got David Howe, long-term writer for around Doctor Who. You've got as I think we've said before, you've got Christopher Barry as the director. You've got, of course, and why we wouldn't be surprised if we would be very surprised if he wasn't there, Ian Levine as associate producer. So you it's a weird in terms of like these days, we talk about things like prosumers, producer consumers and that sort of thing. And that is a real melting pot of kind of where the sort of where television has started to produce its first generation of proper fans who are in a were in a position to start looking at and wanting to tell their own versions and having the medium to do so. But that's a real melting pot of where you've seen that convergence of professionals and fans and professionals in other, because I mean David Howe was like he was writing for Doctor Who Monthly all the time at the time. There were people who was fans but were half in that professional spaces adjacent to the show. But it's a real weird space where that all starts to come together in those weird little video stories, which were $9.99 on our shelves in WH Smith's. Shakedown being another one as well, which is an interesting one,
Yes.
being a fan film, which actually then was legitimised as one of the New Adventures range with Terence Dicks, right? Who wrote it actually anyway, didn't he?
I
So
think they
again,
I think that was more of an intentional collaboration, wasn't it? I think. And the novel
Which one was
is
that? I'm sorry, I didn't hear the one you said.
Shakedown.
Shakedown. Oh, Shakedown. Yes.
Sontaran one, which I
Yeah.
think, am I right in saying the video is a portion that's skipped in the novel, or the
Yes,
novel
that's
is a
right.
portion? Yeah, right.
The novel's bigger and doesn't and skips on the
Which is interesting because you've got a kind of a synergy of two products there, haven't you? Which is very early days in.
But I suppose the question would the stuff that Briggs was doing and that group, would they consider them fan films? Because I'm wondering whether at that point there was this suggestion of like, and we were seeing it across the board, like indie culture. So
Well, yeah,
we
because
obviously
they've got a distribution deal, haven't they? Those videos
exactly.
ended up in, HMV
So
and Forbidden Planet, etc.
they're not like the fan stuff. I mean, obviously we've got better distribution now, but it's not the same sort of space. It's a sort of middle road space.
If they were all made by the same group, like I was saying, that Bill Baggs group, then I would say that they're in the fan film spectrum. They're just it. They, like you said, they had a distribution, right? So I talked about that Farragut Star Trek series, right? They made DVDs of their stuff and sold them. You know, I don't know how distributed it was, but the reason why I would say that it probably is in the fan space, even though things like Kate Lethbridge-Stewart has transcended into the actual show, is because, if I'm not mistaken, they originally wanted to do they did a Professor and Ace audio series, because they weren't able to have it be Doctor Who with the Doctor. It had to be Professor and think they called her Ace, or they called her Alice, Professor and Alice
Yeah,
eventually,
it
I think
wasn't
is what it
Ace,
was.
yeah.
And then they also did the Air Zone Solution. I don't know if
Yes.
that was originally supposed to be the Doctors or not, but they didn't have them play the Doctors. But then they made the series The Stranger, which was
Yes.
supposed to be the Sixth Doctor having carried on. It was supposed to be like the journey that you see in that series was supposed to carry on with the Sixth Doctor, but they weren't allowed to do it, so they called him the Stranger. And they basically had him and Perry, and they were kind of playing the Doctor and Perry. I forget. There was a certain point that it was supposed to take place in his life where I think in the show, if I'm not mistaken, there's a point where he tells Perry, I should just go become a hermit. And the Stranger series picked up literally on that. This guy, the Stranger, goes to become a hermit, and there's Perry on the planet, like, are we done being a hermit kind of thing. And but so that's what makes me think that it's in like a fan realm. They saw that the show was over. We can do something with this. Let's do something with this. And then they were kind of told, you can't do that. You know, so I don't think they had anything official. And yet things like downtime, I think, you know, like it got carried over, themes from it got carried over, and people kind of see that now as like this kind of spin-off, this sort of canon kind of thing. Whereas I don't know if you can count The Stranger as canon because of how much they had to change with it legally, I guess.
But
So
then I don't know. It still feels a murky space because while the intent is from a fan spirituality to it, there's a fan spirituality to it.
yeah.
It distributes out, becomes its own like its own thing, which is viable. That is, it's. I mean, a lot of stuff we see now is based on people's love and fan of something which. I feel
Yeah.
like I've got an argument here and I've got no evidence to back it up, but there are things I'm pretty sure out there which have come out of, fan inspiration of something which has, created something else. Okay, I've got a really bad one, Babylon 5, which, J. Michael Straczynski's love of Lord of the Rings, it's almost blueprinted on that book, those books. It's a bad example, but I don't know. I think a lot of this is a lot about perception of what we consider where that line is. I know exactly what you mean, Brian. I'm not disagreeing with you. But at the same time, there's a bit of me which is like, where is it? Where is it? Is it still a? I suppose the argument. I suppose the best argument is perhaps it's not where the people behind it are fans, but it's like who is the audience? Is the audience
I was
exclusively
just going to say the
fans?
same. Yeah.
Good. Fine.
I was literally just because, to be honest, people have this debate all the time, whether or not Big Finish is canon or not, or the Star Wars books or whatever you want, right? But for me personally, I think there's a hard line, right? I think the TV show, if there's a movie spin-off of the TV show or a spin-off of like Torchwood, Sarah Jane Smith, you know, Class, those things are canon because they're made by the BBC. They're part of the actual universe. Characters cross over and intersect, but it's more importantly, it's made by and put out by the BBC. Now, that's not me saying Big Finish isn't. You shouldn't consider downtime canon. You shouldn't consider that. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that like if the BBC ever released a complete Doctor Who collection, you know, downtime's not going to be in that. Right. It's just not because it's not their property. It's not going to be in there. But the individual fan can sit there and go, well, that was Kate Stewart's origin. And the TV show directly references Kate Stewart. So obviously it must be canon. And I'm not going to argue with them. If it's your personal canon, if that's how you enjoy the show, that makes sense. Right. Like for me, the Eighth Doctor Big Finish plays, well, that's his era. Right. I don't know how much I feel the other doctors anymore. I feel they've deviated far too much from what their TV eras were, but somebody else loves them to death and will believe that that's their canon and so on. And it's officially licensed by the BBC, right? They even get a mention somewhat in the TV series when Paul McGann mentions a handful of his companions before he regenerates. So there's crossover between them, but what's canon? And I guess my simplest thing for it is this. My argument has always been, you can't make an episode of the TV show that requires somebody to have read a book or have heard an audio or have seen a fan film to understand it. But you can make an episode of the show that requires that the audience maybe saw, you know, I'm going to use Sutekh because it pisses people off right now, but to understand Sutekh's history and relation with the doctor, right? But even when you do, especially given how far of a space that is, typically when you're referencing an old villain, an old character, whatever, you give the audience enough in the new episode to understand what they are because they don't have to have read or seen or done whatever. But the TV show is never going to make an episode where they're going to say, gosh, I hope you've seen this fan film or this Big Finish audio because we're doing a sequel to it right here, live action TV. They're not going to do that. But they will do a sequel to one of their own TV stories. So my argument with the TV show being canon, I guess what I mean by that is it's the main, it's the default, it's the one that even the casual viewer will likely have seen. Anything
So
else after that can be canon, absolutely, because but it's probably going to be more individualized because there's going to be that casual viewer who might seen every episode of Doctor Who and love it, but I'm not really going to get into the audios. It's not really my thing. That's how they're going to be. And to them, that's not canon because they'll never understand it. They'll never need it, but it will never cross over in the show in such a way that they do need it. But if they want to, the other fan like myself or others out there who go, this Big Finish stuff is great. I consider this canon, right? I can talk about this in a canon way. It can be, it can make sense to them, but I don't think it's going to be something where, someone's going to say, well, of course this is canon because it happened in audio. I think like Paul McGann is almost the exception to that in a way, because they do reference his stuff.
So, I mean, what you're suggesting is quite a Western hierarchy of canon. So, whatever your main output is the mother lode, is your mother ship, should I say, and everything else falls down on tiers to a point where you start falling into unofficial areas where you can't they could not encroach in that space because they legally can't, and in terms of the narrative of the main thing, would never be in that space because of those sort of boundaries. I'm just
I
wondering
mean,
whether, yeah.
in essence, sort of, yeah. I mean, look at it with Star Wars. How many years did we have of canon books and comics and stories? Mara Jade, as Luke Skywalker's wife, partner, a Jedi, Admiral Thrawn, all of these things. How many years did we have that? And then Disney comes along, buys up Star Wars, and they go, okay, none of that is canon. We're now going ahead and telling the stories that actually took place after Return of the Jedi.
Oh yeah, well they
So
could.
if you can write off an entire section of books and comics and everything at any point because you own the IP, but you're not writing off the movies or the TV shows or anything connected with it in that respect, you're only writing off all of the ephemeral stuff, then yeah, it's not going to be considered canon because the BBC doesn't control downtime. They have the license to Big Finish. Absolutely, or they give the license to Big Finish, but it doesn't mean that they can't. If Big Finish told a story that was canon, where the Fourth Doctor met, let's say, let's pick a famous person here that I don't think that they've used before, Martin Luther King. The Fourth Doctor meets Martin Luther King, and it's the first time a doctor's ever met Martin Luther King. He acknowledges, this is the first time I've never met you. I've always wanted to meet you. This is amazing. So great to meet you. Well, then they're going to do a new Doctor Who story where the 18th, 19th Doctor, whatever, now meets Martin Luther King. It is the first time they've ever met Martin Luther King. Well, you've just decanonized that Fourth Doctor story. Unless you're one of those fans that goes, the Time War erased it. The Time War did that. Which, yeah, fine. You can. You can. And you can. And I'm not arguing that you can because there's a lot of stuff. And quite frankly, they do make the Time War be relevant in that way. But my point is that the TV show will never put in there, oh, I did meet him once before, but the Time War erased it. They're going to leave it for you to figure your own way toward making both of those stories make sense when what they're really doing is going, this is when the Doctor met Martin Luther King. Not that right here. We're telling you the definitive one right now. You can reconcile that other one however you want. So that's my point with the TV show and the movies that, thing that them being actual canon because that's what the BBC controls. That's what, the owners of
But
Star Wars or Star Trek control, that they're.
but this is my point. This doesn't really delineate. I mean, I know what you mean, and we're now talking about canons rather than fandoms, because as all your examples you've had there, these are examples of things which have been officially sanctioned as canon at one point and then overturned later, because, as you say, to to fulfill the entertainment requirements of their new text. They don't want to be having to spend all this time explaining why this might be different to what was said 20 years ago. And we, as we know, Doctor Who would do that with its own canon quite happily, and probably has. I think it might have done with the Fires of Pompeii, not with the Big Finish, but even with things like the Romans. There's little things in there. There's little things in the new show which you could sort of say, well, in the old show. So it still, to me, feels like fan films and canon are not sort of, I know they obviously commonly are, but they're not necessarily exclusive when canon itself is not exclusive to what is licensed, what is owned, and even that space they will change it. And for Star Wars fans who are still upset about the Legends universe, boo-hoo, we had to deal with that in 2005 when we had all the new adventures as kind of erased from canon for a new brand new series of show, and that was
Yeah.
that was hard, and some of us had to sort of scream time war and the tears rolling down our faces.
Yeah, and to be
James.
fair, I'm
Yeah.
not arguing
Yep.
like oh, it's a hard line, this is canon. I'm saying that to me, that's how it feels. It kind of has to be, because if the BBC ever put their foot down and said, "Whoa, stop with these fan films," the way Star Trek did, they're acknowledging we didn't make that. That's not legit. You're having fun. We allowed you to have fun, but now you're profiting off of it. You're selling DVDs off of it. No, that's not a go. They're telling you that's a no-go. That's not us. That's not there. Whereas
Absolutely.
before they were like, you were having fun. You're all a part of the Star Trek universe. And I think that's great, right? Like when they were letting us all make our films, matter of fact, when we did our Doctor Who film, we got shouted out by BBC America on their I guess it was their Tumblr page. As an official spin-off series or whatever, however they worded him. We loved it. We thought it was great, right? Like, but I don't, it's nice that I can think, oh, I'm canon to that universe, right? But obviously I'm never going to make it onto a box set. They're never going to air me. There's never going to be an anniversary for my story, kind of thing like that. But I'm not saying that anybody can't go, this is canon, that's canon. Everything that I read or those audios I listened to, they're all canon. Of course you can. I can. You can. Everybody can. I'm not saying a hard no, they're not. I'm just saying it kind of feels more like at any time the people who own the IP, they can anytime erase whatever
Absolutely.
you decide is canon. And then that has to draw a line somewhere between what is and what isn't. But it's never going to draw a line for what you do or what I do. Like you said, if you wrote in there, Time War did it. I've done it. You know what I mean? Like, that's how we enjoy it. That's how we make it make sense for us. But I don't think ultimately the choice, I don't know how to say that. I don't want to say that the choice doesn't seem to only be ours, probably is the way to say that.
You're going to say something, Christian?
Yeah, I was going to, you mentioned a Western attitude to canon,
Yeah.
and I wanted to explore that a little bit, what you meant by that.
Expand on that, you ask.
Yes.
So, I mean, in terms of like, if we're primarily talking about when we sort of say Japan, which is a good example, and we've gone over this a little bit in the past, I think, Christian, where there is there's been some great stuff written about this. Mark Steinberg's done really interesting stuff around this. The way that they deal with IP has always been in a self almost like a flattened approach. So while we've always in the West tended to have, like, as you say, the big mother load thing, then everything else kind of draws you into that mother load space, into that for consumer benefits. You know, you'd have a trailer, or you'd have a spin-off toys or comics, and those would be things which were meant to sort of gain your interest in, or to feed your interest within this one big main hierarchical text that was the thing that was worshipped. While in Japan, there's this argument that everything's a lot more flat, that the way that people enter these franchises, into these big franchises, is far less hierarchical. So, I mean, the most obvious example is if you look at, say, between manga and anime and live action. I remember when I was in Japan a few years ago, and they had a big send off to Attack on Titans, and I went to this exhibition, and it was all about the manga, even though the anime was finishing, because the manga has substantial amount of clout. But it's not necessarily considered to be like the parent text. They sort of sit with each other. And then there's arguments about how they use characters, how characters will appear in video games and in parts of advertisements in terms of food. Everything is a little more flat, that people just naturally come into these things at different spaces and then circulate around these franchises, rather than it being
Right.
like Star Wars, the film, is the main thing, and then everything else is like a maybe. And certainly over the last few years, we've seen the West start to adopt that with Disney, with MCU, where suddenly you can't say the films are more important than the TV shows, or certainly not the comics. And everything is a little, it's becoming a little more flat as media has become a little more diversified. So I think in terms of like what the meanings are in terms of what is fan, what is canon, what is official, what is the main thing, in a lot of them for decades with Japan, it's been a lot less clear than it's been, as I
Right.
say. So instead of going up, it sort of is a little more flat. If anyone's interested, as I say, it's a book by Mark Steinberg called The Media Mix, which looks at anime, which is really good, which talks about all this sort of stuff. But yeah, I think we're shifting. I think we're seeing it, and we talked about this the other week a little bit with how, I'll just draw you in on this, Brian. You know, where we've had like the Tales of the TARDIS, where we've had sort of older McCoy, older Davison, older Baker in little TARDIS set, reminiscing with their companions over past stories in a way which is pretty officially canon. And then recently we've had, as we were just saying, what we said last time, with the
Clone
comic
Wars page.
strip and the DVD. I was just going to go to that after that. The Destination, is it, what was it called? Destination, was it Destination
Glasgow?
Daleks? No, I'm talking
Oh no.
about the DVD. The
Right.
DVD with the Peter Davison
Yes,
and Janet
and
Fielding and Mark Strickson Dalek Adventure on.
Yes.
And how in that, fans, I never saw, when I looked at it on YouTube, didn't see a single fan question how Peter Davison was now an old doctor and they were wandering around
Well,
together.
of course not, because everybody bi-generated. All the Russell already explained that, which I don't like, I'll be fair, but everybody once Tennant bi-generated into Shooty, he said every doctor bi-generated, and everybody just accepts that, and that's how we now have all of these. They're older, but they look different, they wear different clothes and everything, and it's canon now, and
I
it's
don't think most people, I don't think even most fans, I mean, you have to be very specific sort of fan to, because that's not in the text. That's something he said outside it. And even
Right.
within Tales of the TARDIS, there's sort of different suggestions of how they could exist. But the point being is that need to have that continuity seems to becoming less, and we seem to be becoming more acceptant of that, that we don't need to necessarily have that sort of officialness in our storylines, that we just either accept what we see, or we come to our own conclusions to just enjoy what we see. And maybe that is a kind of cool thing for fandoms. I mean you've got things like AO3, you've got lots of self-contained fan spaces where stuff's written, where the people there who read stuff, they acknowledge its fanness, but they're happy with that, and they buy into their own indulgence of exploring characters through the eyes of other writers in a community. And I think it's really cool. I'm not a big person for fan stuff, even though, like you, Brian, I mean, I did Batman stuff back in the 2000s for several years as comics. And again, as you were saying, we had recognition from the people doing the Batman animated series at the time. They were aware we were doing it. We could see them on the forums lurking and they knew,
Nice.
and it was kind of cool like that. And we had a lot of hits coming through back in the day, and it was interesting. The one thing that I used to find funny is that, yes, you get people in forums who sort of go, "Oh, this is just fan stuff," and you go, "Yeah, that's fine." But it was interesting when you'd actually put it on like fan fiction websites, and you'd get other fiction writers getting cross, because they're going, "Well, you're just stealing other people's property while I'm writing a new news strip, which isn't about fans, a comic strip about things, and you're here borrowing someone else's IP, and it's not fair." And that was an interesting take, and I kind of get that as well. I mean, it wasn't because anyone was trying to be lazy; it was just because sometimes that is what inspires. And it's like, yeah, that show has inspired me. I want to explore that in my own way. I still do it. I've been doing a D&D stuff with friends, and we've been doing this for about 3 years, and I will write comic strips based around those characters. I've even written a couple of songs based around those characters as well,
Nice.
which is
Yeah.
in a weird way fanning my own RPG session, which is kind of cool too. Because again, it's ways to explore. I've even another thing I've done, which I've spoken weirdly publicly about this. I was playing Baldur's Gate, I took the character I had from my RPG thing, my D&D one, and inserted it into Baldur's Gate, which, if people don't know, is a video game about Dungeons and Dragons. And it allowed me to explore that character in a different world, so I could get a better sense of who they were and use it as a sandbox for my own understanding of a character that I was working on. So I think these are kind of nice, fun offshoots of this conversation of like, what is the point, I suppose, rather than sort of like, what is fan fiction legitimate? I think the better question is like, what is the point of fan fiction or fan films and fan.
Yeah, I mean that's definitely not the question I was answering before,
Well, that's what I mean, and I
because
think that's the
obviously
trap.
I make fan films and so on, you know. So like the point is everybody wants to sell. I mean, for us anyway, we want to celebrate. I've always wanted to be a part of Doctor Who. I've always wanted to have those adventures, go on those adventures, have my own TARDIS. So that's why I did it. I've always wanted to tell those stories as a storyteller. I wanted to tell stories in that world. Whether or not it's canon or not was a completely different
Yeah.
conversation, though. The why we do it is hopefully people are doing it in celebration of, you know, and even the guys in the Star Trek realm who got in trouble for profiting off of it, you know, like on one hand, I'm annoyed that they got in trouble for it because they put Paramount put restrictions then on anybody who wanted to be able to tell stories, whereas before it used to be a fun space. But at the same time, I don't blame you for making money off of it.
No.
If you can, good for you. You know what I mean? Like it's great. Plus, what they were doing,
I
if
don't
you saw what
know.
they did, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, I think there's got to be in a weird way, there's got to be a line, because there was a point with that project where they were
I agree.
on Twitter sort of saying, this is going to be the best Star Trek. This is going to be better than the Star Trek, which is the official Star
Yeah.
Trek, which, if you own the property and you're now seeing a counter advertisement, sort of a counter attack on your own
Yeah.
property coming from outside, you're going to go,
Yeah,
right.
I'll clarify, I guess, what I meant there. What I meant more so was like, yes, there we never do what we do to make money. Okay, on my side of the fence, what we do on our series. We never try to make money. We always put that it's nonprofit. We put all our own money into it. My point was that they did something so well that it did generate money. And that is true for any business. If you can do something good, you should be able to make money off of it, right? That's just how business is. If you're good at something, it should be able to bring you money. And these guys, they did something well. Now, they did things wrong. They did some bad things. They, like you said, they touted it as better than the show, come see us. And they shouldn't have done that. They should have just said, here's this thing, we're making it. It's great. Come check it out. They also, I don't think, should have sold tickets. I don't think they should have, you know, had so many investors in it and things like
Didn't
that, you
they
know.
build their own studio from it as well, from the money coming from it? And again,
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure. So if any of this is wrong,
Perhaps. Yeah,
I
perhaps. I don't
apologize, but.
know. I don't know. Here's the thing though. Like there's another group that I know that they do have their own studio or they rent space, they built their own sets, but it was all their own money. They did everything, right? And like they're still doing it for the love of it, right? It's different.
I think Paramount's argument though was that the studio that had been created through this was being used to actually become a commercial enterprise. So they were
Yeah, I can
saying
see that, yeah.
their IP was being used to create something as well as a
Right.
chat. Again, I don't
Well, and
know.
yes, we
It was a
shouldn't be
complicated
profiting
space.
off of somebody else's IP. What I meant was, you know, hey, good for you that they made money off of it. They did something so well, they made money off of it. But I don't know how they went about
No, I
making their
get
money
that.
off of it. But no, if you're making a fan series, if you're doing anything, I'll, you know, this is kind of an unfair point at the same time, right? Because look at us doing Casterbris, right? Years ago, we wanted to talk about the show in such a way that maybe it would become the day job, right? And then we'll talk about what are those other shows, Who Culture and so on like that. Clearly, it's their jobs. They're making money off of it, right? They're not making their own stories, no, but they're making money off the IP nonetheless. So where is it that you are and aren't allowed to make money off of it? Right. And so, not that I'm saying what that group did was right. I don't think it was right. I don't think that's the right way to go. But there is a way to make money off of somebody else's IP. And that is by talking about it, like in the way that we're talking about it, because clearly people do it all the time. You know,
But
what is
then
that?
I suppose the argument would have been And again, maybe I'm wrong here, this could be diffused. If we were what you're doing as a Doctor Who commentator, you're not you if you if there were you're not challenging the commercial prospects of the Doctor Who show.
You're
If
supporting it really, aren't you?
yeah, if Doctor Who show was a commentate was a commentary based show with three guys talking about Doctor Who, and we used the same name. You could then maybe they would turn their attention and go, "Well, hang on," but I don't know. Maybe not these days because podcasts are now a medium where you, it's yeah, who knows? But yeah,
No, it's definitely different. I'm just saying that there are ways to profit off the IP. One of them is not to
true.
directly challenge what the
Yes.
IP is
Yeah.
making and say that, like, don't see their movie, see our movie. You know, that's not the way to do it. But there are ways to make money off of an IP. So when people say, oh, you're just using that IP, you know, why can't you use your own? Well, you know, there are other ways of doing that, you know, and at the same time, I mean, God, what was it? 50 Shades of Grey came around because what it
Yeah.
was a fan writing. What was the series that they were writing about? They were writing about something. Twilight. They were they, it
Twilight.
was a yeah
Yeah,
it
it
was
was
a
Twilight.
somebody's fan Twilight series, and it
But
became a movie unto itself.
wasn't Twilight based the same sort of thing, Twilight? I can't remember. I'm sure I read
Perhaps
somewhere
I'm pretty
that
sure that
that
started. No, I think that did start off as some sort of fan fiction,
did
possibly.
it? Interview with the Vampire was based on. There you go.
And so you got this chain of absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and I mean, you could say that about a great many things too, and not even just like they started as fan fiction on fan fiction websites, but there are, I mean, I've been wasting my time on YouTube a lot lately watching. I've been watching a bunch of old British TV shows for one, but also just some things that pop up. So many movies in the 70s, early 80s that were 100% Star Wars clones, you know, I mean, because that's just what they did, you know, like, hell, what was that? What was that? There was, the movie Asteroid, and I'm not gonna remember the name of the other one, but they were the same exact theme. A comet, an asteroid is coming to the Earth, and they decide to take these people and send them up there. You know, they're miners or they're whatever. Go. It's the same story. They knew what they were doing. They tried to profit off each other, kind of, or one off the other. So yeah, it happens, and I don't think anybody, like, if you're making fan films, if you're doing fan comics, if you're writing fan short stories, keep doing it because it hones your writing. If you make
Yeah,
films, keep doing it because it hones your
absolutely.
filmmaking skills. That's what I'm saying. Still do it 100%, whether or not it's canon or not, or will be or not. Who cares? Do it.
Because I think, and there's again going back to hierarchies, there are hierarchies of tastes, and people tend to look down on fan films. I think
Sure.
one of the powerful things about getting involved in fan projects is that sometimes one of the hardest things to actually get a story rolling. And I was doing I was doing a little comic strip story with one of our other colleagues, Magnus, a couple of years ago, getting the idea down and getting the characters out right before you even get to the actual doing the stories is one of the hardest things, actually building that universe. So if you're going to about, as you say, honing your skills, borrowing a universe which is already established to then hone your ability to write stories with a structure already contained, a nice container is a good way to sort of hone your craft because you're then no longer sort of in that wishy-washy space where nothing is certain, and therefore the characters and the story, it's just hard to build things through. But if you've got that central premise, you can go, that's what we know. What can we have fun now? Where's the fun here? That's a
Look,
really good way
that's
to.
Hollywood's done that for years. They're constantly making the same movie over and over again because the formula works. I do want to roll back to one thing because we kind of glossed over one official Doctor Who thing that absolutely did get rewritten. And again, the argument is the Time War. But what it just made me realize was, why the heck didn't we use that thing in the actual show? And it's the official Ninth Doctor, Richard E. Grant, Scream of the Shalka. And I know that he came back in the most recent series, where they had his face pop up. But when Christopher Eccleston didn't do the 50th anniversary, all of us said, well, you should have used Paul McGann. And then they went to John Hurt instead. And it was kind of like, Paul's right there. Well, they could have done a Richard E. Grant, and they could have explained that what he did in the Time War, like, erased his life. Like, and literally wrote it in the story. And it's a shame
The only
because I
thing
love
is, he'd
Richard E.
just
Grant, and
been
that would
in
have been
Doctor
great.
Who, hadn't he? That's the only that
Oh,
I agree
right.
with you, but he had only just been in it, hadn't he? That's
Yeah, 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 yeah.
where they've gone wrong with that. But that would have been brilliant. Really?
Yeah, I forgot he was in that. That's right.
Yeah, that
But
was nice.
but
I
yeah, I
think that
mean
would have
they
been
do.
great if
He
they'd done
was
that.
announced as the official Ninth Doctor. Like the BBC's, this is a even though it was a cartoon, he was the official Ninth Doctor. He actually got
It
that
was.
title, which usually they wouldn't necessarily do that in cartoon form, you know, but then it quickly got erased.
So when does fan fiction become canon, and does it really matter who decides? Let us know what you think. That's all from us for this time. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon for another conversation.